This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome in, Warriors Weekly Podcast for 95.7 The Game. It is episode number 4, as the Warriors are 12-2. John Dickinson, Matt Steinmetz with you as always. And look, Steiny, last night as we record this on Wednesday morning, Warriors put a thumping on Brooklyn. It was, I mean, so much to get to. MVP performance from Steph, defensive player of the year type stuff from Draymond Green. And I think, and I hit you with this last night in our little back and forth via text, I think it might be time to throw the Warriors up a tier and put them maybe into contender status. I know it's early. I know you're going to come down my road for thinking it and saying it. But, man, that was an impressive win last night.
Absolutely. It's a kind of win that, because it happened in New York, all the media is going to take note of it. And you can already feel the residual bump they're getting from that game. It feels like more and more people are coming around to the fact that the Warriors could be really good this year. I'm not ready to say they're a title contender, but I'm not ready to say they're not either. You started talking about this, you know, as a championship team, and then I just started to think of some things. What could go wrong? What are their challenges going to be? I mean, the one thing, you know, we can start with, and I'm not here to denigrate them at all, but in fairness, they haven't played Utah, they haven't played Phoenix, they haven't played Denver, they haven't played Dallas. They haven't played Milwaukee. They haven't played Philly. So they still got a lot of room to prove stuff. But absolutely. And here's the one thing I was thinking. Nets, I don't know that the Nets without Kyrie Irving, if this is a finals matchup, I don't think the Nets can beat the Warriors without Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Because they just, like, they know how to defend Durant. They got Iguodala, who knows how to defend him. Draymond Green, who knows how to defend him. They know how to help off him. They know how to push him to spots where he's less effective than he is in other spots. I just thought they just did a great job on him, especially in that third quarter. I mean, he's not going to go for 8 every third quarter, but he's not going to have many 16 for 25s against the Warriors. I'll tell you that.
That's a great point, and I think – you know, maybe one game in a final series, mm-hmm. he might do that, but you're right. He wouldn't be able to do it repeatedly. And I think the way the Warriors are able to defend James Harden is another key to that, because they're able to make him work for what he gets. And look, there's going to be stretches in games where maybe he gets to the free throw line. Maybe he kind of takes the game over a little bit, but he just seemingly is incapable now of being dominant consistently enough to where it frees up Durant. So I think that's a big time. Like, you can always find things in these head-to-head matchups that you sort of file away for later, And that was something that really stood out. The Warriors can do enough against Harden to where he can't dominate them. But then because Harden can't dominate, then that means they can focus more of the attention on Durant. And the Warriors, they've gone from a team that really didn't have any wing defenders to now a team that is so solid to where they have a few different looks they can throw on Durant. And I'll say this, because I want to get your take on just the defensive game plans. I know there's been a lot made of triangle and two and box and one and all of that. But the Warriors, I will say, are more scheme specific, it seems, in the early part of this season. Whereas in years past, it's, hey, this is our system. This is how we want to do things. We'll live or die with it. I kind of put this in the chasing wins category of, like, they're almost looking at every game, how do we win that game more than they have in the past?
Yeah, and here's what I'll add to that. When you talk about Harden, and I think it's Curry can guard him now. Steph Curry can guard James Harden. Right. That was always a matchup that they'd never go to. It was always Klay Thompson. And I'm not saying Steph can, you know, you'd want him to guard him all game, but Wiggins guarded Harden a fair amount yesterday. But Harden didn't get much at all off Steph Curry. And again, you know, we talked about it last week. There's something going on with Steph and his upper body strength, his core strength. You can see it help him a few times a game. And I thought he did a great job of staying in front of Harden. It seems to me like Harden, he might not be in great shape, but even if he gets into great shape, I think he's lost a half a step. I think we might be looking at a player who's kind of on the downside of his career, even if it's just a little bit. And I just had it written down. I don't think the Nets can beat the Warriors without Kyrie Irving, because he's kind of the wild card in all of this, because he can score, like he can break guys down. So, but no, it was an incredibly impressive performance by the Warriors last night, no doubt about it.
Well, and I think you look at it, it's, you know, Kyrie has the ability to get to the basket, he has the ability to shoot. In essence, it makes Harden almost the third option. And I think Harden kind of has to be the third option
exactly
in this matchup moving forward. And look, we haven't even talked about Klay Thompson coming back and what does he provide for the Warriors if this winds up being a future matchup. But it's funny. And look, I know Twitter's not the real world, but just to kind of give you a taste of where the Warrior fan base is coming off of last night. So I tweeted something that's kind of along the lines of how I started the recording of this podcast. Like, hey, I think the Warriors are contenders. You know, I think it's maybe time to put them in that category when Klay Thompson comes back. And it's funny because
that's not enough for Warrior fans, is it?
I'm thinking, boy, people are going to think I'm over my skis a little bit, right? A little too early to say that or what. I actually got more people respond saying they're contenders right now without them. And look, I'm not going to go that far, but it's hard to argue with how they've played. I mean, when you look at how they've played, I mean, the third quarters, they're buttoned up. When they don't play well, they're still hanging in games. Like, there are a lot of things, and I know the schedule is the schedule, but there are a lot of things that this team has done in these first 14 games that look like the things that they did when they were in the championship run.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. If there's one, here's the one thing I was thinking about, and you were talking about Twitter, and I tweeted this, you know, last night, because it's starting to hit home, like the makeup of the Warriors. So they have the five guys who have won titles: Curry, Klay, Draymond, Looney, and Iguodala. Outside of those guys, and I get it, they've won titles. Well, now you're going to go into the postseason with Damian Lee, never been to the postseason. Juan Toscano-Anderson, never been to the postseason. Wiggins went one time and lost in the first round. Kuminga, never gone. Payton, never gone. Bielitsa, very limited in the postseason. Jordan Poole, never been to the postseason. The only outlier is Otto Porter, who was on some Washington teams that got into the second round. So the only thing I would caution is, you know, the playoffs are a different animal, and the Warriors are going to go into the playoffs with a lot of inexperience. So they're either going to have to be carried by their champions, or a couple guys are going to have to go from 0 to 100, you know, in the postseason. And that's one thing I see as, you know, something they're going to have to overcome. The other thing is, and, you know, you never wish anything, but 14 games, they got to get to 82. And, you know, a lot of crazy things can happen in the regular season. And one little tweak, one little knee sprain from the wrong guy, and all of a sudden, you know, now they drop back in the pack a little bit. But I don't think there's anybody out there who thought they'd be this good this fast.
No question about it. It's John Dickinson and Matt Steinmetz, our Warriors Weekly podcast for 95.7 The Game. We're recording this the Wednesday, the morning after the Warriors' dominant victory in Brooklyn over the Nets. Just kind of taking a look at the big picture of where this Warriors team is at right now. I want to go back to something you said about the guys that have been there having to carry the Warriors through, let's say, once they get to the postseason. Call me crazy again, but I feel like I wasn't sure they would have had enough going among that group to do that. But I look at Steph right now, and more than enough, right? Like, he's the MVP right now, and he won the head-to-head. I mean, you talk about winning the head-to-head against the other guy that's right there neck and neck with you in the first fifth of the season, as far as, you know, it was Steph and KD, and it was unequivocally a Steph-dominated performance. But you look at the level that Draymond's playing at, and the level that Iguodala's playing at. Looney, I'll throw him off to the side. He's solid. Klay Thompson becomes the obvious X factor in this. But I just keep thinking, even Klay's worst-case scenario, where he isn't quite the same as he was, but still can provide shooting and still can provide minutes that maybe somebody else isn't taking, I almost feel like that might not be enough to win a championship, but it would still be enough to make a legitimate run once they get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I've been giving it a lot of thought about when Klay comes back. And, I mean, look, there's no doubt it's going to be incredible. There's no doubt everybody wants to see it. There's no doubt everybody wants him to be as close to Klay as you know, the Klay of 2 years ago as he can. But I do think when he comes back and starts to get minutes, and then slowly you would hope that those minutes get bumped up, what kind of effect is that going to have on the players who had been playing more in his absence? And again, I'm mostly talking about Jordan Poole. Can he make the most of 20 minutes instead of 30 minutes? To me, that's going to be a big thing. I also think we haven't seen the lack of size be a factor yet in the game. But, you know, the way they play JD, it might not be a huge factor. You know, I look, they were shooting up before the Nets game, and I'm not sure what they did last night specifically. 48% of their shots, JD, were threes. 48% of their shots were threes going into last night's game. And, I mean, look, if you shoot half your shots from beyond the three-point line, the biggest guy on the court or the guy closest to the rim, he's not going to get most of those rebounds because they come off long. And then it becomes a quickness game and an anticipation game. And the Warriors have always been great at that. So I think size can bother them, but it's got to be, you know, I'm reminded of the old Celtics back in the day where, you know, the Lakers had a fast break that was unstoppable. But and so the Celtics, what did they have to do? They had to just crash the offensive glass with their size and kind of, you know, if we don't get the rebound, obviously we're going to be susceptible, but, you know, we got to get offensive rebounds, put back, get fouled in there. And then that slows up the other team. So, you know, I look at, and I know every team's not like this, but, you know, if the Lakers get it together and they're sitting there with LeBron and Anthony Davis, and LeBron is disciplined enough to be a power forward in that situation, stay close to the basket, then I want to see kind of what happens to Golden State, because that's one place where I think they're vulnerable, even though they know how to play small better than anybody else in the league.
Yeah, I think, and that goes back to the conversation about, you know, what tier they're in. Look, putting them in the top tier doesn't mean they're going to win it, right? And it doesn't mean that they aren't going to have challenges along the way or in playoff series. And I think your point's great when you look at, you know, who they haven't played. And we're going to find out here in the next month. I know they've got a couple of games against Phoenix coming up here at the end of November, beginning of December. They have the same where they play a home and home against Denver at the end of December. So we're going to find out here just how it all equates when they play those teams. But yeah, I think size is one thing. I mean, I wouldn't take the Lakers out of contender status, even though they're in shape.
No, I would not yet.
Yeah,
not
you know,
yet.
Not yet. And you know, Brooklyn clearly flawed. And you know, the individual defense of Draymond and Steph, and you're right, Steph. I mean, there were times where Steph looked like Gary Payton on Harden, like, and part of that is Steph's improved, but part of that is Harden can't quite get where he wants to get to, you know, as consistently, and then he's not getting the calls at the level that
exactly
used to getting the calls. So you add that little tick of decline, plus he's not getting the calls at the level, and all of a sudden he's significantly less effective. So it kind of remains to be seen. But yeah, the rebounding is something, you know, I think I'm gonna mention this guy every week. I'm surprised at, and we don't have to spend too much time on, I'm surprised at Otto Porter. Like, I thought Otto Porter was soft. I really did. Like, he's not really, like, I always thought he was shoot the three. Like, there was a point where you look up at halftime, he's leading the team in rebounds at halftime. Yeah. And like, he has an ability, he drove to the bucket a couple of times when there were, you know, smaller players on him. Like, there's a little bit more to his game, and I think the Warriors have a lot of players that do just – this team's winning on the margins, I guess, is what I'm getting at, better than they have in a long time.
JD, this was something I was very surprised about with Otto Porter. And not – I was, obviously he's played well for the Warriors this year, but I didn't realize, he's played 31 playoff games, okay? And in the last three series, he's averaged, JD, 33 minutes. He played 33 minutes a night in 14, 15, and 10 playoff games. He played 33 minutes a night in 16, 17, in 13 playoff games. And then in 17-18, they lost in the first round. He still played 32 minutes a game. And you can say what you want about Washington. That they were a playoff team for that stretch there. And he was a big part of it. So he's legitimate. And you know what about Otto Porter? I never thought he was soft. In fact, I kind of thought during the run, when the Warriors were pretty good, 14-15, obviously, I always felt like he could hold his own against those teams. Remember how we always used to say, this guy can't do anything against the Warriors, that guy can't do anything, this guy gets shut down. You know, Porter seemed like he fit in those games, or he could play against the Warriors, if you know what I mean. Good enough to play against the Warriors.
No, I think that's interesting. And he was on a team with a bunch of guys that couldn't a lot of the time, which I think maybe elevated that to an even greater extent. Final seven or eight minutes or so here, our Warriors Weekly podcast for 95.7 The Game. A couple of things I wanted to get to that I had just jotted down. Klay Thompson and James Wiseman, got a little bit of news on them yesterday. Wanted to get into that, and then we got to save a few minutes for Jonathan Kuminga, because he has become a part of the rotation here since we last did this podcast a week ago. Klay Thompson playing 5-on-5. I know Steve Kerr went out of his way to say, hey, that doesn't mean he's going to be on the court next week as far as playing in games, but he's getting closer. And then James Wiseman behind Clay for now, but it still sounds like Wiseman's going to be back playing in games before Clay Thompson. Just your general takeaways.
Well, so I'm looking at Clay Thompson, and Steve Kerr said he's going to come back at home. So if you look at the schedule, they play at home on the 20th and the 23rd. But if he's going to play before that, I believe the date is December 8th. He would have to play because they go on the road between the 8th and the 20th. And I don't know. They're clearly kind of camouflaging things. They don't want to get anybody's
hopes. He's ahead of schedule, isn't he? Let's just put that rat on the table.
He's just going to play December 8th?
No.
By December 8th?
I don't think so.
Okay. So then I think we're looking at around Christmas time still. But I mean, and as for Wiseman, he's just, I mean, you know, people, I got asked this question two or three times. Who's gonna have to make the sacrifice when Clay and Wiseman come back? Wiseman's gonna have to make the sacrifice. He's gonna have to earn his playing time. And if Wiseman can handle a smaller role, 12 to 15 minutes a game, and give him the energy and the like Kuminga does, well, then he's going to make them better. You know what I mean? If Wiseman can kind of go into a game like Kuminga, then they get better with Wiseman.
Well, and that's a nice segue, I think, to Kuminga. I think there's another thing just as we branch off here. You start talking about Clay and who's going to sacrifice and – So I may add one more thing to the final 6 or 7 minutes here, and that's Jordan Poole, because I think it's become abundantly clear the last week and a half or so that Jordan Poole is probably going to be, I don't want to say the odd man out because he's still going to play, but he's going to be the guy that probably is going to have his role limited more than anybody else's once Klay Thompson returns. And I started to have the thought, and we'll bring it back to Wiseman and Kuminga because I think that's a good conversation too. But I had the thought last night, and you brought it up because I didn't think anything of it on the broadcast as we're watching the TNT feed of the Brooklyn game. But Steve Kerr, mic'd up during a timeout, you noted that you thought this was another case of kind of like a few years back in Houston where – The audio guys caught something that maybe Steve Kerr wouldn't have wanted to go over to the national audience.
I agree. I think he used the word, we want to explore the offense more. I think that's the way he said it. But that told me it's like, hey Jordan, you got to run these plays deeper. You got to run our offense deeper into the shot clock. But Kerr, you know, said it to a second-year player that he doesn't want to lose. But, you know, he's Jordan Poole. I kind of think they're getting away with him a little bit, but he's not playing well enough to play 25 to 30 minutes if the stakes get high. Not the way he's playing now. If he's going to shoot 29% from 3-point range, then he can only take 4 a game or 5 a game, not 8. And maybe that'll happen naturally when his minutes come down.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, because he's still technically the backup point guard. And I know you could say, well, wait a minute, maybe Iguodala's the backup point guard at some point, but technically the backup point guard. But I can see the scenario where if Clay comes back and Clay's solid, Poole's getting 6 to 8 minutes a half, basically, when Curry's right. Maybe not on the floor, because you do want to have somebody with that offensive skill set on the floor. If he's having a hot night, he's having a hot night. But the other part of it as it pertains to Poole is the Warriors have other options once Clay comes exactly. back. They don't have a guy that can handle it, but what if on a given night, well, Clay's playing and Iguodala's kind of out there and you play Damian Lee because he's more effective, or you play Gary Payton II.
Yeah.
He's more effective or can fit his game into a box. So they're going to have options. It wouldn't surprise me if Poole's a guy that it's almost, hey, he's going to get his 6-7 minutes a half. if he's hot, he might get more. If not, then you just move. You just try and get through those minutes with a combination of players that maybe are a little bit more effective.
And that's one thing I'm going to look for as the season goes on, because the Warriors have had no set rotation this year. He's just been putting certain guys in when he feels like it, kind of giving everybody a chance. And now that I think about that, I wonder if he said, you know, he thought to himself, I'm talking about Kerr, you know what, we're going to get Clay back early January. That gives me 2 months. I'm just going to do, you know, there's no sense in establishing a rotation before Clay gets back, because Clay's going to change the rotation. So the one thing I am going to look for is, once Clay gets back, is he going to try to find a set rotation? And if he doesn't, which means maybe one night he'll go to GP2, another night he goes to Jordan Poole, maybe another night he goes to Damian Lee, will that start to impact the bench unit as the season goes on? You know what I mean? Like, you know, now you're getting into March and April, Gary Payton II doesn't know if he's playing game to game, but he's got to stay engaged. I think it's working fine now because there's not a lot of, because there are a lot of minutes to be had. But, you know, ideally Clay comes back and plays 25 to 30 late in the season. You know, somebody's going to take a hit.
And I think it's Jordan Poole that's ultimately going to be the guy that takes that hit. And I think you said something, we were going back and forth, you said, and rightfully so. And in this case, it would be rightfully so. I want to spend just the final 2-3 minutes on Jonathan Kuminga, because he's in the rotation. It's not a big role, but Steve Kerr said after the game, what, last Friday they beat the Bulls, Kerr put him in there. He's guarded DeRozan a little bit. He was on LaMelo Ball a little bit. Like, he's the most impressive thing for me about Kuminga has been the fact that it seems like he's gone from summer league and training camp and the preseason when he got run. He's gone from a guy that's almost trying to be this ball dominant wing, can do it all, future star player,
right,
I'm going to come in, I'm going to rebound, I'm going to defend, I'm basically not going to take a shot unless I'm wide open that's not a dunk or a layup, and I'm going to avoid the catastrophic mistake at all costs that's going to get me pulled from a game, and just fit my game. He's playing more like a big man, which I think he is.
No doubt. He is,
as opposed to a wing, and I think that's the way that he can continue to get minutes. It's little things. It's dunks.
What is he, about 6'8"?
Yeah, he's 6'8", maybe even a little bigger.
See, I actually wonder, can they play him at 5?
I think they already have, because and I know there's been quibble of what, because he's been out there with Otto Porter, and when they're the two bigs, and it's, well, who's the Kuminga's the 5?
That's the thing that stuck out to me. There was a play last night in the Nets game where he was on the wing. I think he cut back door. He kind of fumbled the ball a little, but he's so big, he got control of it in the painted area, and he just went up and dunked it. It reminded me a little bit of Chris Webber. Like, Chris Webber used to, little scrums in the, you know, he picked the ball up, he had great hands, and he just went up and dunked it. And I saw that play last night, and I thought, boy, he must be bigger than I think, because, you know, he was able to go up kind of over a guy with a guy kind of near him. You know, I said, I thought this last night, you know, could Kuminga basically take Wiseman's role? And maybe. Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
If he can be effective doing those things that we've been talking about, and it comes back to fit, can you fit your game in the box of being a role player?
Absolutely.
And it looks like Kuminga very quickly has figured out, this is how I can play right now. And it's not trying to be, you know, the next Kevin Durant or Giannis as a wing player. It's, no, I'm going to play as a big and try and become a defensive monster, and the offense will find its way. If I get an open look at a three, I'll take it. Otherwise, I'll keep the ball moving. Like, add it to the list, Steiny. Final thought from you, but just kind of add it to the list of like question marks the Warriors had as to how they were going to figure out how to operate. And it even looks on the Kuminga front like they're getting more out of it than you could have reasonably anticipated.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Let me finish up with one thing that I'm annoyed about. You ready?
I'm ready.
That the Warriors go into Cleveland and Cleveland won't have Sexton and Mobley. Like that, and it's not like I'm not, I don't mean it from the standpoint, oh man, Warriors get every break in the book. But God, I wanted to see Mobley play. I really did. And,
yeah,
you know, they were playing very well. So, yeah, I kind of wanted to see Mobley to see, you know, how much like Wiseman he is, if at all, if he's any little different. So that kind of stinks. But, no, nah, man, Warriors, they're off to a great start.
I'll just put it bluntly this way. It's the game has no juice now. Like looking ahead, the Cleveland game has no juice. The Detroit game has no juice. I mean, the Warriors are 12-2 and it's going to be 14-2 and they're going to come home. And, you know, the next game that's going to be big really is, I know Toronto's in, but then Philly the night before Thanksgiving, Portland after that, and they go play the Clippers. But that to me is the benefit of a game like last night. You get last night.
Exactly.
Now you got two in your back pocket. Like you can go kind of screw around a little bit and still win those games and you're 14-2 coming home and then you recalibrate again. So yeah, the Warriors have got this thing dialed. Good stuff, Steiny, as always.
Yes, sir. Next
week. Appreciate it, my man.
All right, man. Talk to you soon. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.